Hello and welcome to episode 169 of Speak Beastie for January 22nd, 2023. I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
And I'm Marjolaine. I'm back in a regular episode, as I think it's
welcome so long. First episode of 2023.
Yeah. My last episode was with Victoria Yates, so I can't complain. But in a regular one, I don't know. It feels like maybe 2 months.
It's been a minute. Gosh, yeah.
But good to be back.
You were busy gadding about internationally and having a fabulous new job. And you had stuff going on.
A new job relevant for the main discussion today. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hope not too relevant, but we'll
see. Let's tease for you listeners. What's coming up next? How does it tie into Marjolaine's fabulous new job? We'll find out.
Is she now a globe-trotting magizoologist with animals in a suitcase?
Oh my god, please and thank you.
I wish.
Can I be your bunty? I'll walk around and stare at you adoringly if you pay me.
Of course.
Only if you pay her, though.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that for free.
I mean,
like, I would temporarily, but I also have a mortgage, so there's got to be a salary associated with the staring adoringly. Speaking of people we also stare adoringly at, we would like to sponsor this week's Speakeasy Patreon supporter, Livia. Thank you so much for your support. We literally could not do this without you.
Yay, thank you, Livia.
I guess let's move on to the Phoenix Register.
Let's.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
There is not a lot going on in Fantastic Beasts world right now. Hopefully now that we're in the first quarter of the new year, we will start getting news on more stuff, but in the meantime, we do have one piece of news at least. Some voice actors have been announced for Hogwarts Legacy, which is not really our purview, but it does have beasts in it, so we're covering it.
Did you watch the video where we went into the Room of Requirement and there is a part that looks so much like Newt's case?
No.
It's my favorite part so far. I'm so excited about that. But you can have magical beasts and you put them in the room of requirement. And the part of the room of requirement, I don't remember if they call it the greenhouse or something like that. But you enter that and it creates different part for each creature. It's exactly the same idea of it's like the Newt case, and it's you can play with your Niffler and with your Mooncalf, and yeah, that's so cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
that's so cool. It's like an I don't know if either of you play Pokemon, but it's like an interactive version of the box where you put your Pokemon that aren't on your team. That's so cute.
Yeah.
So we'll link that in the show notes, listeners, so you can check that out. And again, so it's getting more into our purview.
Yeah.
We can talk about this. It's fine. There's bees. There's a Niffler. Mooncalves.
Yeah. A Groupon. I think we see a Groupon in it.
We definitely did see one of that in one of the previews.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of bees. And in the last one, I think we saw that we can ride Hippogriff, to
yes,
fly
they did
around.
Say they're going to be mounts.
So that's cool.
So some of the voices have been announced for Hogwarts Legacy, in addition to all these cool beasts that you'll get to interact with. The headliner is Simon Pegg as Phineas Nigellus Black.
Yay.
Which is not the voice I necessarily would have imagined for Phineas Nigellus, but I'm not mad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite shocked that Simon Pegg wasn't included in the Wizarding World before, because that's...
Right?
I think that's what he said in the video presenting him as Black, but yeah, that's a type of actor that fits the Wizarding World for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah,
no, he absolutely does. It is surprising. You'd think he'd be at least in some kind of cameo or background role or something, but
yeah, and it looks like he will make Phineas Nigel Black really annoying and really, yeah.
Just as he should be.
Yeah, of course. He said something like, the main point of this character is that the player don't want to become him, don't want to be like him. So, yeah.
I don't know. He's headmaster. He's rich. Blacks are traditionally pretty hot. I don't see what the problem is. So anyway, moving on from my now thirst for Phineas Black, there are two actors who will voice your avatar, depending on, I guess, the gender you choose. Sebastian Croft, who was in Game of Thrones and Heartstopper, and Amelia Gething, who was in The Spanish Princess. So that's neat, because normally, I don't play a ton of video games, but I feel like in most games the protagonist is usually silent, mm-hmm. because they don't want them to have a voice, because that's going to throw you, the player, out of your sense of immersion. So I think it's kind of neat that they are giving your avatar a voice.
Yeah.
I guess you'd have to have one in order to cast spells, right?
Yeah, and I wonder if it would be like the old Harry Potter games when you cast a spell, every time they say the spell... And they better Defendo. Have a good voice, because it can be annoying. Expelliarmus, Expelliarmus. Flipendo.
Amazing. I hope they do. I hope it's clearly the exact same clip every single time.
It's like someone else's voice until you get to Flipendo. And then it's like the person who voiced Harry back in the old games just... Pops in amazing.
So, just real quick, my husband was in a production called Fight Night. This was way back, probably 5-6 years ago. It was right when Cursed Child came out, and he was in a sketch about a group of friends who gets into a fight in the line for Cursed Child. Because they all want to be first. And then it turns out that one of them is a legit wizard. And she used Flipendo. And I wanted to Flipendo myself into the aisle and die. Because it's like, what? So whenever I think about Flipendo, I always think about just people yelling at each other on stage and pointing sticks at each other. It was great. Anyway, we also have Leslie Nichol. I think it's Leslie Nichol. Mm. As Professor Matilda Weasley.
Hmm.
Yeah.
She's also been in Downton Abbey and Supernatural.
Mrs. Patmore, Downton Abbey.
Oh, thank yeah. you. I haven't watched Downton Abbey, so. Oh.
The cook.
I love her.
Okay, that's fun. For Professor Onai is Candace Kane. She was in one of the Call of Duty games. She did voices in that. And she was also in The Human Centipede, too. We're going to move on from that real fast. We also have Professor Satyavati Shah, who's being played by Soam Kapila, who's been in General Hospital and the Tom Cruise Mummy, not the Brendan Fraser Mummy.
Yeah, not the best one.
No, correct. Not the good mummy. The mummy that did not start the WB Dark Universe franchise. As Everett Clopton, we have Luke Youngblood. That name may sound familiar because he was also in Harry Potter. As Lee?
He just can't get enough of the Wizarding World. He's got to come back.
You know, this is like casting Mahershala Ali as Cottonmouth and in Blade. People are just going to be like, Wait, what?
Lee Jordan?
Can you do that?
Is that you?
Luke Youngblood was also in the short-lived musical TV series Galavant, which if you haven't watched it, you should. It is phenomenal. He is so good.
Yes. And Community, right?
I believe he is in Community as well, yes. As the character Amit Thakkar, we have Asif Ali. He mostly does Bollywood stuff, so I apologize I didn't put that in there because I would butcher it, but he does seem to be working pretty steadily in Bollywood, which is very cool. As Mahendra Pelwan, we have Adam O'Connor. I could not find the right Adam O'Connor. I couldn't be sure it was the right guy, so Mr. O'Connor, if you are listening, please write in and tell us all about your credits so we can talk about
Send us your resume.
Link us your IMDb, please.
speakbeastie@gmail.com.
And finally, as both Nearly Headless Nick and the Sorting Hat, we have Jason Anthony, who was on Star Trek Discovery and Call of Duty Modern Warfare. So, sounds like an all-star team. It'll be interesting to see what comes out.
Yeah, I'm really excited about all these new characters. I hope this game is story-focused enough that we have a lot of backgrounds about all these characters. Because, yeah, I want to meet Matilda Weasley and I want to learn more about all these this professor and student, so yeah.
I like that there's a lot of like original characters not tied to the original series too. Like we've obviously got Phineas Nigelis and we've got a Weasley, but I like that a lot of these names we've never heard. So I'm really interested to find out more about who they are.
Yeah, it's nice that they're not leaning on established names in order to create interest in the characters.
And that we don't have obvious Death Eaters family, future Death Eaters families that will tend to give us what we need to know about the kind of characters that can be on the dark side. So we don't know which one would be nice or not nice, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. That is it for the Phoenix Register.
Yeah, still no news about movies that we...
No news about movies. Hoping that, again, since we're in the first quarter, once we get news about that Harry Potter festival, that's supposed to be happening, like, this year.
Yeah, we still don't know anything about that either.
And
that would be the place for them to announce, you know? So, we'll see.
And hopefully we'll get more news soon. And once we do, we'll keep you posted.
And also, I feel like we should get news at some point soon about what from the Wizarding World is going to be at Epic Universe, because that's opening in 2 years.
That's opening next year, yeah.
Yeah, so I feel like we should learn more about that soon, hopefully.
Hopefully.
All right, so now it's time for our main discussion. For this week's episode, we are discussing scenes 48 through 51 in the screenplay. So 48 is exterior, closed U-Bahn entrance, Berlin, same time, evening. And this is where Newt goes through that rusty gate to get into Erkstock.
Yeah. That's the first thing that I thought about is what was built first, the prison of the or the U-Bahn, but I'm guessing the prison, probably. In the making of... in the Blu-ray, they said the inspiration for the prison was an old quarry in the UK. So I don't know if it's also the story of this this prison, that it was first a quarry, next a prison, and next the U-Bahn was built around it. So
could
I don't know, but
I think it would make sense that the prison came first, and I honestly don't remember if it's headcan, or if it's like fanon or actual canon, that like when the Chamber of Secrets was built, the entrance to it just kind of shifted to fit whatever was in the castle around it. So I feel like it's a similar situation, that the Erkstag would just kind of shift to fit what was around it.
Yeah.
Or maybe they needed a place to hide the prison, so they just kept digging underneath the U-Bahn. This is a great place. No one will look here.
It's fine.
And it reminds me also that we speculate a lot before Crimes of Grindelwald how the metro in Paris will maybe have connection with the Wizarding Paris, and it never did. But this time we didn't talk about the U-Bahn before, and finally it's the U-Bahn and not the metro who has a connection with the Wizarding world.
So in the screenplay, right after they introduce the next scene, the 49 interior Erkstag prison, Berlin, moments later, we get these really great like floor plan renderings of what Erkstag is supposed to look like, the descent down with the stairs and all of that.
Yeah, and they're really detailed. I have the Kindle edition, so like if you zoom in, it says like finely hewn rock. And there's notes about the runes that say Erkstag prison versus the English versus the German. It's all very cool.
Yeah, it's cool, but it's, for me, it's a bit weird that we have this. It's one of the most detailed piece of document that we have in the screenplay, but that's not the most impressive set, in my opinion, in the film. I mean, it's cool, but it's just a tunnel in the mountain. I mean, that's not a... I don't know. That sounds weird for me to have this specific place with so much detail in the screenplay. But
yeah,
that's true. Especially since really all the floor plans are just for the entrance, not for the actual.
Yeah.
It just shows how
the actual prison, which it would be much more interesting elevation and floor plan, I think.
Yeah, it shows how much thought goes into like just the smallest moments too, because we're not even in this entrance for very long,
and it's in the dark, so we don't see anything.
Yeah, the amount of planning that went into it.
I would guess that they have all of this because the Erkstag entrance, like the foyer, was more of a physical set, whereas I'm sure the the actual prison was also was built in CG.
Yeah, definitely.
So. Which is why that's why we don't have the finely hewn rock notes about the actual prison, just the foyer.
We even get the scale.
Yeah, there's like a little guy.
Half inch to 1 foot.
Yeah, and about the detail that we have, so we have runic alphabet transcription of Erkstag prison, but it's literally Erkstag prison. So I was like, it doesn't make sense. What would it be in English, a transcription of English and not German? But yeah, it's cool that we have runic alphabet in a doorway. But yeah, that's why that's in English?
That's one of those things that I think is very much like a film consistency thing that they were going for. Like, oh, we use these rooms all the time for Azkaban, so let's use them here to be like, this is prison. You know this, audience.
I was double-checking because I was like, well, I think there were runes on the Erkstag registration form. But then I went back and double-checked, and there are... It's alchemical symbols, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was one in particular I was Googling trying to figure out like what exactly these were, and it came back as being the Satanic cross, and I was like, well, I just got put on a watch list. So there's that. If I get arrested, that's why. It's because I had to Google alchemical symbols.
I love your note, Anne.
Well, I mean, so like a couple of them I could identify as alchemical symbols. Like, there's a couple of planetary symbols, there's a couple that were used in alchemy, but I went through like three or four lists of alchemical symbols to try and match up what the symbols were, but a lot of the symbols were just not on there, so I really just think maybe they just went into Wingdings and just started hitting buttons.
Yeah, no, I think
that's... And it looks very mysterious.
That's Minalima's touch. They always use a mix of alchemical symbol and runic symbol in the design for the Wizarding World. So, yeah. We have alchemical symbol everywhere in the Wizarding World, but that's just their touch.
It's like they mix it up so that it's almost like it's not totally realistic, that we can't really draw a real world comparison to, because maybe it's like wizards use this weird mixture of things.
Yeah.
So in this scene, we obviously have Newt talking to the warden guy who's at the little desk. So he says to the warden, "I've come to see my brother. His name is Theseus Commander, blah, blah, blah." He gives him the papers. Then we have this overzealous charmed stamp that is like just stamping everything in its sight. And, like, makes a beeline towards Tina's photograph, which ends up on the desk, and Newt, like, snatches it away and rescues it.
Yeah. It's so funny, because if you look at the picture, Tina's expression is like, excuse me.
Yeah, I don't know why it reminds me of Wally, the little robot who tried to clean things, and... I don't know why it reminds me of Wally and the little cleaning robot that is really into his task and
must stamp everything.
I mean, if you tell it to do one thing, it's gonna do that one thing.
Which, like, I wonder, when it stamps a document, does it just do one stamp, or is like the entire thing just covered in random stamps because it's just like, yes, stamp.
I think it's definitely the latter. You get your stuff back and it's just illegible because the stamp was having such a good time stamping things.
And so since we mentioned it in the beginning of the episode, that's where there is a connection with my new job since 2 weeks, because I'm working for the French Penitentiary Administration. So not in Erkstag prison, but... Yeah.
Oh, I was like, you're not working in the secret underground wizard prison? Ugh, what do we even keep you around?
I think you need to get an overzealous charmed stamp for your desk.
You definitely do.
So in this part, this is where Newt notices that the warder is wearing Theseus's tie. And then he gets searched with the wand, and Picket and the Niffler get confiscated and locked in those little cubby thingies.
Yeah.
And he calls Teddy a nightmare.
And he calls Picket a pet.
Yes.
And Picket is offended.
I just wrote down Picket should win an Oscar, because that attitude is like... peak performance.
Yeah. Yes.
But that's quite, I mean, you can understand why the warden could not allow Picket to go inside, because, I mean, it's in his name. He pick locks, so that's the first time since, because we saw Picket helping Newt being imprisoned at least 2 times in the first 2 movies.
Yeah.
So... for once, somebody did his job and ensured that, you're not bringing something or somebody who can pick locks inside prison.
Yeah.
But he does lock him in a cubby that then Picket can pick the lock of, so...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but I guess he also figures, like, even if the bow truckle does escape the cubby, what is he going to do? He's got stubby little legs. He going to run into Erkstag? Good luck, buddy.
So the screenplay includes these cute little renderings of Picket and the Niffler.
Yeah, it's presented as nude sketches. Mm-hmm. That's so cute.
And I cannot overstate how cute the baby Niffler sketches are. Like, they look like little, like, baby echidnas. It's so cute. And Newt has a little note on them that says, should probably give this to
Bee.
Because he knows Bunty loves the baby Niffler, so he wants to give her the drawing of them.
Oh my god, can you imagine Bunty's reaction?
Like, she's so happy.
That's for me. Oh, that's...
I wonder if he means give her the drawing or give her the Niffler.
Give her the baby Nifflers.
So cute. Picket's eyes in the drawing just crack me up.
Yes. Yeah, I want a full edition with only nude sketches in it as illustration. Yeah, that's really cute. And Yeah, I still, because that's what I wanted in the first place with this franchise. I wanted to have all of Newt's notes, field notes about the beast, and we had a bit of it in the first one in the background, but yeah, I want more of it, so yeah.
So then next in this scene, the warder takes those weird little like grub things and squeezes it, and it becomes a firefly, and he puts it in the lantern and he gives it to Newt. And we have this great little exchange. How will I know where to find him? Newt says. Warder says, he is your brother? Newt says, yes. Warder says, he will be the one who looks like your brother.
Absolutely savage.
I don't like this character, but this line is so good.
It's great.
No, it just hits. Like, I remember the first time I saw it, the whole audience is cracked up.
It's like unexpected. You don't expect there to be a funny line in the scene, and then it just comes and you're like,
well, and it's so specific and it's so mean. Like, it all just ends up to be really funny.
Yeah. I mean, if we try to understand the everyday life of this guy, I mean, no kidding, he's like he is, because that's an awful job. He's all alone in his cave. I mean, nobody else is working here, apparently. So yeah, that's really...
Yeah, and if he tries to bring a book, his stamp's just going to go at it.
Oh, my gosh.
And the Switch hasn't been invented yet. So, like, what is he going to do? He doesn't have a phone. He can't be on Facebook.
And I don't know about you, but every time I saw the movie, I'm convinced that he's eating the little worm, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because he's chewing something. And every time I think we see at some point him eating them, but we don't. But I'm still convinced he's, yeah, that's also
that's what I thought too.
I did too, because like he reaches into the bucket and I'm like, oh, he's definitely going to get a snack. But no, he's not. He's getting the light for Nate.
Yeah. What is he eating? We'll never know. So right after we get a nice laugh, then we get this really awful, heartbreaking moment that's like this movie's they're not dangerous line. The I'll be back pick on my word. And aww. Pig is just staring out of his little locked cubby at Newt walking away. That's so sad.
And then the warder's just like, I'll be back pick on my word and I'll be minister for magic. You're so mean. Yes. Calm down.
And yeah, so it's implying that every a visitor in this prison is not just a visitor. They are just, yeah, they never come back.
Yeah. Which
the cubbies where the confiscated items go look pretty full behind this guy, so.
Which is so weird, because if you are sending people in there and you know they're not coming back, just sell their stuff, my dude. Why are you hanging on to it?
Yeah.
Like, you're at a side hustle.
So then we move on to scene 50, exterior German ministry night. This is where we see the crowded streets around the ministry, full of supporters for Grindelwald. And they're holding signs and all this stuff. And we see Helmut looking at it all. It says impassively surveying this from the top of the steps.
Yeah, that's, again, that's one of my complaints for the movie. And this scene is a good example. We see the supporters, the Grindelwald supporters as crowd. And we never, I don't know. I wish we had a more political side and of this crowd, and more understanding who these people are and why they are following Grindelwald. And yeah. It's just a crowd, and I'm bothered by that, because it's a real life comparison, and you need to understand what is this crowd and who are these people. But because they are not evil people in the crowd. They're just followers, but supporters. But yeah.
Even if they had just taken the camera and made it like swoop through the crowd and we caught like snatches of conversation from these different people of like what it is that they like we would get the context of why they're supporting this guy rather than just having this screaming mob.
And even Helmut, we don't have any scene with him having a casual conversation with someone. It's just Helmut looking Helmut. I don't know.
Impassive
just
as
Helmut
always.
Doing Helmut stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't have a personality. It's just this dark police force. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a bit frustrating for me.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're right. We just, as far as we can tell, these people just showed up.
Yeah.
And we don't know why they like Grindelwald. We don't know anything. I will say, though, that for someone who is so... He was so sneery about meeting in the cafe beginning, he loves a car. Like, Grindelwald loves a car. Which is a bit hypocritical. If you are truly that, like, anti-Muggle, why aren't you coming in on a dragon?
Yeah.
You really had to have the Phaeton? Come on.
Yeah. Oh, Grindelwald. Yeah,
that's a cool car.
No, it's a great car. Like, he has impeccable taste, but still.
I mean, it fits his costume and his appearance because he looks like a Muggle. He doesn't look like a wizard. So, yeah.
So, scene 51, we cut to the interior of Grindelwald's car in his continuous night.
Yeah, and that's when he see a vision of Jacob in the glass on the window of the car, and he sees Jacob with a wand. And I noted that in the script, it doesn't say that after seeing Jacob, the vision of Jacob, Grindelwald leans back and smiles, closing his eyes. And I don't know if it looks like it's a reaction from what he sees, but it can also be just the reaction of what's happening outside of the car. But I wonder, it looks like the reaction from the vision, so does he find it funny? Or does he smile because he thinks, I know Dumbledore's plan. He will not surprise me with Jacob, with a Muggle with a wand. So I don't know.
I think maybe he finds it funny. The way, you know, when like you see a little kid using like the toy vacuum cleaner that's got like the balls on top that pop and spin. It's like, oh, it's like a little baby with a wand. That's so cute.
Yeah, he thinks Dumbledore is so desperate that he gives wand to Muggles. That's hilarious.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like how the script describes what he's like his reaction to the supporters. Because it says, Grindelwald stares with cool fascination at the funhouse of faces beyond the tinted glass. That cool fascination. It's like he's almost like fascinated by why they're supporting him.
Yeah, that's his dream. The dream that they shared with Albus. Like he see his dream in front of him, the crowd following him, the power just near his reach. So yeah, that's I like the description, and I love how Mads plays it.
Yeah,
it's because we had a glimpse of that with Depp's portrayal and at the end of movie 2 in front of the crowd, but it was more, I don't know, it was more theater. It was in the performance, and there it's more like it's an intimate scene when he's inside the car, and his genuine reaction to the fascination of the crowd. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. But Vinda is not that cool. And
This is like the first time she is not just a serene agent of chaos.
She is not comfortable.
Which makes me, because we know that she's okay with crowds because she was fine in the tomb. And we know it's not like a claustrophobia thing because, again, tomb, she was fine. But I think she, I wonder if it's that thing where she's okay with Grindelwald supporters in theory, but not in practice. Mm-hmm. And also having people banging on the windows of your car and sticking their hands into your car and screaming around you is a scary situation, no matter how serene you are normally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She has a more normal reaction than Grindelwald has. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I almost feel like she's like, she's afraid for his safety because it's not a controlled environment. Whereas in the tomb and stuff, it was very controlled. Just, yeah, this is not.
That's not adversary. That's not opponent. So it's not enemy that she can shoot at them. It's just... Right.
Yeah, these are their supporters. Yeah. She can't fight them.
Yeah.
If one of them hurts him, then... But she'd have to wait for him to be hurt first.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a way to show that Vinda is not a leader. She's on Grindelwald's side, but she is not comfortable being a leader of a crowd. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Vinda tries to tell the driver to take them around the back, that it's not safe here. And Grindelwald is like, no, roll it down. And so she rolls down the windows, and then, like, scary chaos, fingers are coming in. It's creepy.
Yeah.
And then he, like, opens the door and launches himself out, and I just summed it up as, Vinda, Gellert, no! Gellert, yes! Because that really is the way it feels, because she's really having, like, an anxiety attack here, and he's just like, goodbye!
So basically, Grindelwald is pulling a Harry Potter here. Everyone's saying no, yep. And he's like, yes.
Harry no, Harry yes.
I do.
Yeah, I like this scene. That's even if I wanted more the point of view of the crowd, I appreciate what it... It's a way, really, of showing Grindelwald and the power that he has mm-hmm. concretely... on the crowd, so that's
mm-hmm.
that's interesting.
Yeah, and I know we'll probably talk a lot more about this crowd in the next episode, but it strikes me very much as like him getting out of the car is such a performance of him walking with these people. He knows that that's more of a powerful image than him just skirting around the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very, it fits in with the very populist image that he's pushing for really hard, that, hey, I'm a man of the people. I am not afraid to be amongst my supporters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I will let me crowd surf on them.
Yeah. Because he's trying so hard to get on the ballot at this point, too, that it's like,
mm-hmm.
he feels like that image of him walking with this crowd of people, they can't really ignore that. They're going to have to be like, yeah, we got to let this guy, you know, these people want him.
Yeah.
And then we get these other pictures. We have the monogram hood ornament design from the car, which, did we decide what this little winged creature is? I feel like we talked about this before, but I don't remember.
I feel like we did. I think it's a dragon because I've zoomed in really close on it, and just like the face shape of the head is very draconic. And then I started looking into the different types of dragons to see if I could figure out which kind it was modeled mm-hmm. on. And the interpretations of dragons vary so much from medium to medium to medium, even within the Harry Potter franchise, because the way a Welsh green is depicted in this illustrated edition isn't going to look the same as it looks in this illustrated edition, isn't going to look the same as it looks in this video game, or mm-hmm. as it looks in... So... Yeah. It was impossible to pin it down, but my best guess is that if it is a dragon, it's a Peruvian viper tooth, because that is the smallest and fastest of the dragons, and so that's what you'd want on as a hood ornament on your car.
It also has, like, this little, like, beak thing, so maybe that serves as, like, the tooth.
Maybe.
I don't know. Huh.
Yeah, and that's a bit of a spoiler for news case after, but... I looked into German serpent-like creature, and There is a Scandinavian German one, the Lidwurm, that is really predominant in a lot of Germanic and Scandinavian mythology. So maybe that's I think it's a good symbol for Grindelwald to have a Lidwurm or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, cool design.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, again, Grindelwald's aesthetic is on point. If he were not a fascist, it's a good aesthetic.
I mean, fascists are good on this kind type of thing. That's it needs to be effective, it needs to be striking. So yeah, that's the point.
Yeah, and like so now I'm wondering, who was his graphic design team while he was on the run?
Venda.
Or was this just like what he was doing while he was on the run? Was he just like, no, backwards G's, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure the double G's with the Deathly Hallows symbol, I'm sure that's his design, that he tried everything around the Deathly Hallows and but I'm sure it's from him. That's his idea. But
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is where we leave off for today's main discussion. So we'll pick up in this crazy rabid crowd for next episode.
Yeah. That's one of my... Oh, the only political, really political scene is just after that. So I'm excited about that.
So Marjo, yeah. I believe you hinted at it earlier. I think you have a Newt case for us.
Yes. So, like I said, for the Newt case this week, I wanted a German fantastic beast. And I found one. So it's not the Lidwurm, but it's almost like a Lidwurm. It's the Tatzelwurm. So the Tatzelwurm is, in German, it means literally legged worm. And it's a creature from folklore in Alsmontane, so not just in Germany, but also Austria, Switzerland, Italia, and somewhat in France, but in all these different places, it can have different names. It's almost like the Loch Ness Monster, because cryptozoologists consider it's real. We have many tales of encounters with Tatzelwurm, especially since the 17th century, and some pretty recent in the 20th century. So, yeah, some people think it's real, but we don't know exactly... if the real version of the Tatzelwurm looks like the one we imagine or not. But maybe it's we have a real Tatzelwurm somewhere in the mountains. So what does it look like? So it's a type of mountain dragon with legs, generally just two legs, but sometime more. And most interesting, it has a cat-like face. So imagine a dragon with a cat face. So yeah, just it was the main reason why I chose the Tatzelwurm, because a dragon with a cat face, that's I like it.
So like I'm just imagining like a dragon and then it has like Amy's cat face on the end.
And some of the illustration that I found, it's quite like that. It's just a cute face with a dragon body without wings, but
now I have to Photoshop that. I'm gonna take a picture of Luna.
Oh my god, you're not kidding. Like I just googled it and I found one image. It's like it's like snake, and then literally the front half is like a cat.
Yeah, so less cute. It has a poisonous breath. So
I don't know. Is it not pointed at me? That's still pretty cute.
And about the size, we don't know. Sometimes it's pretty small, around 30 centimeters, so 1 foot. But maybe it's larger, like 2 meters, so 7 feet. So not huge, maybe small, maybe larger than human size. We don't know, but yeah, it's it lives in caverns, tunnels or cracks in the Alps mountain, and it's quite shy. It doesn't come out often, but it can be aggressive and dangerous if you find one on your way in the Alps. And yeah, like I said, it's a type of creature that create debate of does it exist or not, especially in the 19th and the 20th century. Some place, especially in Switzerland, they used the interest for this mysterious creature in the mountain to develop tourism. So it's quite like Nessie in the Loch Ness. They use proof and stories that, yeah, the Tasovom is there. So we can publicly say that we can organize Tasovom hunt and things like that. And yeah, it was quite popular. And it's still used today in some area. The Tasovom is, they have activity for the kids, like, you can find a Tasovom and things like that. And we even have a photograph from a Swiss photograph named Balkin. So he took a photograph of the Tasovom in 1934, so quite close to our movie. And we have the photograph, so it doesn't look like what you can imagine.
It looks like a cat.
It's terrifying.
Like, it literally looks like someone just painted a rock to kind of look like a snake.
Yeah.
What's with the nostrils?
What he said, like, he found this fun-looking wood, and he took a picture thinking that he was just taking, a picture of a wood, but the wood suddenly moved and moved away from him. So he said, oh, maybe it was a beast, and he looked at the photograph, and it looks like that, so... So, yeah, that must be the Tasovom. So, okay,
sure.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's what it looks like.
Yeah. So yeah, but I found more epic legend around the Tasovom, and in some legend, it says that it can breathe fire or at least generate great heat. So when it crawls into sand, the sand transforms into glass, which is pretty intense. I like it. And most of the stories are quite boring. It's just random guys who said that they saw the Tasovom, got attacked or not, and sometimes they died of a heart attack after escaping because it was so scary.
Whoa!
Yeah, one guy, I think it's in the 18th century, it's what happened. And yeah, I don't know what he saw in the mountain. I don't know if it's the Tasovom, but yeah, he died. So, but I found a very cool legend. The legend, it takes place in the it's more in the Middle Ages. So at this time, a Tasovom or a Lidvom, it's not sure which, in different version, it's one or the other. But the two are mountain dragons, so yeah. We don't know if it's that it has a cat face or not. So the Tasovom was terrorizing a region when a murderer called Winkelried came, and he proposed to try to kill the beast in exchange for his freedom, because he was about to get arrested and executed for his murder. So he said, yeah, no, I prefer to go chase the Tasovom for you if you... Yeah, so the village thought, yeah, good deal, because anyway, if he dies... Who cares? So he went, he found the beast, and there was an epic battle. He thrust a thorny branch in the monster mouth, and so he can use his sword to kill the Tasovom. So he succeeded to kill the beast. And to celebrate his victory, he put his sword in the air like, yay, I did it. But a drop of the beast's poisonous blood fell on him, and he kills him directly on sight.
So,
yeah. The end. He's dead. But the beast is dead
oh,
too.
Oh man!
Whoa.
And I like this story. It's quite interesting. And in fact, the Tasselbaum is quite present in pop culture this past few months, and I wasn't aware before I did some research, but you can find it in the recent game God of War Ragnarok, because you have to battle them in this game. And I looked to some clips, and it looks quite difficult, and they are very much more scarier than than Emmy's cat's face on the
it has arms too.
Yeah, that's the two arms. Yeah, the two leg and the claws, and it's more the face of a saber-tooth cat than the a cute little cat. So yeah.
Not cute.
Not cute. And yeah. And I also found a song which came out in 2022 from the German medieval rock band Schandmau. And so the song is Tatzewurm, and it's a song that tells the legend of Winkelried that I talked earlier. So, and that's a really cool song. I love it. So yeah. I put the clip in the song in the common room, and it will be, I guess, in the description if you want to hear it.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes so that we can all rock out together.
Medieval rock, German medieval rock is good, so you can. And so yeah, it's the title of the song, and really cool. I have the song in my head now. That's it for my nude case. I hope in my next trip to the Alps I will not cross this path. Except it's just a little cute creature, but I can't say with all these stories. I'm not sure, so prefer not to encounter one.
It's hard to say what kind you'll get. Since they all look so different.
Yeah, will you get the saber-toothed tiger or will you get the cute kitty?
So the podcast question for this episode is, why is Grindelwald smiling when he sees the vision of Jacob with a wand? We would love to hear your thoughts, so you can drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, you can message us or comment, or you can email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell us what you think of the episodes.
And while you're out and about on the internet, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, on Tumblr, I think, still. I'm pretty sure I saw it reblog something the other day, so maybe it's still going, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And finally, you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. There's cool stickers. Our graphic designer, Carolyn, is always working on amazing new treats for the patrons. She's made coasters and just incredible stuff. And there, of course, our team is always pumping out amazing new content. So keep an eye out for that.
All right. I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
And I'm Marjolaine. Case closed.